Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. It's me, Len Testa, and we're back for a couple of summer episodes now that we've finally got something new to talk about. And in order to talk about the new stuff, we need to bring somebody on who knows what he's talking about, and it is this man. You know him. He is the 2014 Tony nominee for Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role in a Transgender East German Rock Musical, Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going? Jim, boy. I gotta say, I love your performance. I don't like your chances.
Well, you know, it's lucky we have Neil to fall back on.
I know, right? Yeah, you make him in second in that one.
That's right. I really should have checked before we booked that role. Yeah, it's like,
you know, what are the odds of anyone upstaging this?
Yeah,
that's what you thought.
Go figure.
But I got a lock on this one.
All right. Well.
Excellent.
Okay,
we're talking about Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Get out of the leotard here, but please, continue.
So. We're talking about Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which is, of course, a role that Neil Patrick Harris is playing on Broadway. We're not going to talk about that right now, but if you haven't rented the movie or bought it on iTunes and seen it on Netflix, it is a wonderful story, even though the subject matter, it looks a little odd. Great soundtrack, fantastic writing, very, very good movie. I recommend you go see it. Anyway. Jim, you were recently down in the Magic Kingdom for the press event for the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Were you not?
That I was.
How was it? First of all, they didn't have a working ride. So did they tell you they didn't have, were they like, come on down for the ride? I mean, attraction. I mean.
Well, all right. Let's be fair here. In fact, that there's been a lot of speculation about the attraction, and particularly the web kind of lost its mind like 3 or 4 days out from the opening or this media event. They were shooting the commercial and everybody was noticing. Notice how they're holding onto the rails. They're not raising their arms. There must be some sort of problem with the attraction. And then behind that, there were all these photos of them doing an envelope of protection and an intrusion test, where
yes.
Basically they're pushing a giant plywood form around the track with little pieces of balsa wood sticking off, with the idea that if anything, you know, along the edge of the track hits, that you know that they have to fix that.
Right.
And so, of course, all these stories begin running around the web about, oh my God, you know, it's broken, you know, it's just the rock work and the things are rocking too far.
I heard Mikey from Life Cereal wrote on it and died, man.
Well, there you go. That's right. Yeah, this just Pop Rocks took the top of his head off. It was terrible. It's not really nearly that exciting. The story that I have been told by folks who actually know what's going on is basically this isn't about they screwed up the rock work. This isn't about the train cars, you know, go out too far. In fact, if you heard the reports from people who were on the ride during the press event, they mentioned that there seemed to be sections of the track where they were digging, they were pulling dirt away from the underpinning of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, what the hell is that about? And that's the funniest and kind of saddest part of this story. This isn't about Imagineers screwing up. This isn't about ride engineers screwing up. This is over-enthusiastic horticulturists.
Over-planting stuff.
That's it, exactly. I mean, the whole idea behind the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is that it's supposed to look like it's been there forever. And, in fact, one of the thing that's really kind of fascinating about this ride, and you know, probably ride 2, 3, maybe ride 4, Glenn, you'll be able to see this. But if you're paying attention as you're coming out of the tunnels or that sort of thing, you don't see, you know, ugly rooftops. You don't see air conditioning ducts, you know, on the buildings around. I'm not entirely sure how they did it. But, you know, I mean, you really are looking at beautiful vistas in all directions. And, it, you know, one of the ways they did that is that there's an awful lot of trees that have been planted. There's an awful lot of, you know, grass that's been planted. And evidently what was happening was that once they began running the tests with, you know, because water dummies don't complain when a branch, you know, intrudes or a blade of grass or that sort of thing. But members of the public would. And so it's like, oh, crap, we have to creep the horticulture back in a little bit. So this is why, you know, you went from normally the way Disney works with a media event is you'll have, you know, you'll have some soft opening, you'll have the media event, and then they throw it open to the public.
Right.
And this really is a case of go back, you know, pull the plantings out, you know, move them somewhat safer, also figure out how we can take that bare spot on the track and not make it look like a bare spot. So so that's what's going on right now. There's no, you know, nobody's head got ripped off. You know, and again, that was one of the reasons why when they were walking with their intrusion thing, I mean, again, they walked the entire track. They were looking for plantings that had just been put in 3 and 4 months ago and that grew, you know, that out further than they expected. And this is going to have to be an issue that there's going to be some poor slob who walks this track every day basically with a weed whacker.
With a set of pruning shears and a weed whacker.
Yeah, but
he should walk it with a machete. That'd be like Halloween Horror Nights.
Nothing says a happy, fun family coaster like a guy with a machete. Man.
Exactly.
You know, so. Speaking of which, that's the other thing that's kind of interesting.
About,
there we go. Interesting thing about this attraction is that they can't decide what to call it yet.
Seven Dwarfs Mine Train?
Well, that they've got. But it's like, how do you describe it to somebody who's outside looking at this thing? Is it a family coaster? Is it a family thrill ride? They really aren't sure. I mean, the funny thing was, in the panel discussion Friday last, you know, poor Chris Beatty as well as Tom Staggs kept going back and forth. You know, they're clearly trying out, you know, nomenclature for this thing because no one's ever done anything like this before. it's kind of hard to describe how clever this design actually is because, face it, we've been standing outside the construction fence for, what, 2 years now? You know, looking...
Yeah, at least at one Olympics ago, yeah.
There you go. Watching this thing rise up. And, part of the problem, let's be honest here, was that the version of New Fantasyland that was announced in September of 2009 isn't what's open now. Tom Staggs came in November that same year. Iger, who, you know, was still trying to decide who was, you know, who he was going to put the glass slipper on, who he was going to make his second in command at Disney. So he decided he would have Jay Rizzullo, who was head of parks at that point, and Tom Staggs, who was Disney's chief financial officer, switch positions. And as the story goes, so it's January of 2010. And, you know, so Tom is being brought up to speed about every single project that Imagineering is working on. And, you know, he looks at the New Fantasyland stuff, and at this point it's got in the middle, it's got that giant show building where on one side it's Cinderella's Chateau, and, facing actually...
It's Princess Greetings, right? Yeah, right?
Yeah. And, that they had spent a lot of time tricking up the effects for this thing. I mean, I remember talking with the guys who worked up the illusion of... I mean, Cinderella's was actually going to stand in front of you in the room, or actually, you know, you're going to walk into that moment in Cinderella where she's bent over the bench and she's weeping and, because she can't go to the ball. And then, you know, she, you know, it's the, what is it? The fairy godmother appears, waves her wand. She stands up, she makes two turns. And by the time she makes the two turns, rags are gone, full blue ball gown. And then she walks over and greets the guests. And it was this illusion that, you know, the Imagineers were ridiculously proud of, more to the point they'd spent a year and a half perfecting.
Yeah.
And
that effect, the effect of rags to gown, yeah.
Yeah, because, again, this had to happen in front of a guest, and more to the point, it had to happen in two different rooms simultaneously so you could have capacity for this thing.
Right.
And
they got to work.
Yeah, well, everything was ready to go. I mean, you know, and the conduit had been placed. Everything at the worksite was ready for this thing to go.
Yeah.
And so Staggs is ending the meeting. It's like, this is great, guys. Like, you know, this is wonderful. One question: is there anything that you wish had been included? And there was this like really awkward pause in the room.
Everyone's gathered up their materials. The door is open.
Yeah, and it's like, well, You know, and they began. And they began talking about this ride they'd actually developed in the early 2000s. In fact, that's the weirdest part of the story, is that New Fantasyland came from the development of Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. You know, that they were looking at, they were looking for replacements for 20K. Mm-hmm. And they thought that the thing about 20K with no subs moving in it was this whole side of the park had lost energy because there were no kinetics. There was nothing moving.
There
was
moving around from it, right? Because it's all dump rats. Everything's on the inside.
There you go. And so it's like, we need something outside. We need something that really grabs people's attention. And more to the point, you know, just that it was the idea that we've been doing the same thing with our princesses over and over and over again. We've been doing these enclosed dark rides, and in fact, that's the other part of the story they don't like telling, is that they were going to jerk Snow White out, but leave that space for the Disney Princess ride.
Princess or princes?
Princesses, like multiple, like you were basically going to be traveling from room to room, you know, and each time, oh, here's Aurora, and oh, here's Jasmine, and oh, and it's just, ugh, you know.
But it's that like was it Mulholland Madness in DCA? Like that, but with princesses.
Very good. But again, they had the research to say that, look, we put that ride in, there's going to be a line of little girls all the way out to Kissimmee that are going to want to ride this thing.
Yeah.
So they thought, okay, so we're taking this, you know, we can at least put the Seven Dwarves to work for a coaster.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it seems like it's about the right footprint, too, for the size of what 20,000 Leagues used to be.
There you go. That's exactly, you know, again.
They just moved it to the left.
Pretty much. So, but anyway, you know, the weird thing is they then began, somebody looked at it and was like, wow, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could do some other stuff? And then, as happens, you know, they looked at the Little Mermaid thing that was being built for DCA, and they talked with the food people who really want to do a Beauty and the Beast restaurant. And suddenly, the very thing that had started the project moving forward, the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, was off the table.
So,
you know, again, that's it. They just sort of, you know, that was the thing that sort of brought Staggs up to speed about, you know, what had started the project and this. And he was intrigued, and, well, do we still have the model? And it's, yeah, okay, so let's go take a look at the model. And he took out the drawings, and, yeah, and, you know, and then he pulled an Eisner. That's Michael Eisner, very early on, when he came through the door in 84, you know, was trying to figure out how to energize the parks. And so on a Saturday, because, again, this was a guy who the studio was dead last in Hollywood and, you know, had the turnaround animation and television and all that. So mm-hmm. Imagineering was literally his Saturday activity. So, you know, on Saturday he shows up at Imagineering and he brings along, you know, his son Brent. And it was one of these things where, yeah, Dad, can we get out of here? You know, and so – and so he's just – this is his introduction. He's walking through the building, meeting people, and they take him into the model shop. And, you know, everybody's deliberately positioned their thing that they really want to get built toward the front. And Brent is bored out of his mind and wanders away and discovers the model for Zippity-Doo-Dah River Run, which eventually became Splash.
Wow.
So Splash Mountain. And it's like, Dad, what's this? And
I would ride this.
I would ride this. And that's honestly, you know, we owe that ride that's now gone around the world to a bored teenage boy.
Awesome. All
right.
Let's all thank him on Twitter.
There you go. So again, Staggs, same thing. You know, Staggs
pulls an Eisner. You might have 10 years ago saying something like that would have definitely a different connotation.
Now, well, there
like,
you go.
It's like the reformation of Richard Nixon or Bill Clinton, you know, after 20 years, you're like, you know what? You know,
there you go. There you
anyway.
Go.
All right. So he decides to go forward with the mine train, right?
Yeah. Staggs has three boys, and it was like, they, you know, would you like to go meet Aurora? Would you like to go Cinderella? Would you like to ride with the dwarfs? It's like, oh, Dad, please, dwarfs. But now, I mean, the ship has sailed. I mean, you've got
that's right.
This, yeah. You know, I mean, you've already done a lot of your site prep. You've already got, and more to the point, they suddenly are in this situation where, because they've change the plans. And again, we're talking project announced September 2009. The ship has sailed. It's January that they begin having these meetings about let's lose Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty. Let's do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
So at this point, it's not like they're 4 months into the project. They're probably like 2 years in 4 months into the project, because when you go to the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and you say, I can do this, it's because they've already given you the money to do a prototype. It's not like you say, yes, Jim, I know I can do this, and then you set about figuring out how to do it. By that time, you've already got the basics of the technology in your back pocket, right? So they've already spent the money on it.
No, this is it exactly. So to suddenly be in a situation where, hey, you know that thing we're going to do? We're doing something else. But again, Iger, what's interesting about Iger is that Iger puts you in charge. You know, Iger only steps in if, you know, it's like, iceberg, dead ahead! Yeah. You know, just sort of like, you know, that's the only time Iger really steps in.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, you're the CFO guy who's now the theme park guy, and you think this is going to change, you know, make the difference. Okay. But, you know, now you're in the situation where you can only do so much site prep before the decision was that, you know, what was it, it was January 2013, wasn't it, thereabouts, when they opened New Fantasyland?
Yeah, late 2012, yeah, like November, December, yeah.
Okay. Think about it. You know, there's a lot of work you can do during that period, but as soon as you open up that street that runs past Be Our Guest and down
behind,
there.
Once you've got guest walkways around you, yeah.
I mean, I remember I did an interview with the project manager for New Fantasyland. And he just – what was fascinating, he kept talking about we've lost our construction umbilicus, which, you know, again, sounds really painful. But basically what that meant is that everything that they were going to build with that day had to come through into the site before the first guest came through the door.
Yeah.
And then at that point, it's not a question of, you know, that I-beam that's just backstage there, I need to go get that. It's like, can't do it. You know, we've got people in line for aerial.
You're not going to winch it in a crane over the guests either, right? You're one broken cable away from CNN.
There you go. And that was – that ultimately – I mean, that again, if you read the boards, everyone's like, why did it take so long to build this? Because, again, it's like you could only bring so many saltines with you on that trip every day. You know, and once you've used everything, you're done. And
I think that's why they occasionally would close off that a walkway from the back of New Fantasyland through to Storybook Circus so they could get stuff back and forth.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But over time – you know, and again, once the building, you know, because again, what's fascinating about Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is literally you're looking at a massive show building in the center of this thing. It's been hidden under a faux hill that then has been covered with all of this, into this greenery. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. The further you get, the higher you get up, the more faux grass and you know that sort of stuff you get to. I mean, they knew building this thing that in, you know, year 5-6 out, they didn't want to have, you know, people climbing up there with again, a, you know, a weed whacker. It's just sort of like the higher you get up, the more faux stuff there is. But as you get down to ground level and you're trying to sell this idea of hidden away and, you know, behind the Seven Hills, you know, near the Crystal Waterfall, all that crud, you need real trees. You need real grass. So, you know, that's, again, where horticulture came in and wanted to do a good job and maybe did too good a job, but we've already talked about that. So let's get to the attraction itself, which got a couple of recommendations here right off the bat. I mean, I know that people are going to be eager to go to this thing first thing, you know, because it's a brand new ride. You want to be the first on it and that sort of thing. And let me recommend that you really want to, with this attraction, try to get in line to do it late afternoon, just as dusk is coming on, because there's a number of effects in this thing that really shine when you're losing the light, which I know sounds kind of ironic, but anyway, let's walk us through. And again, I'm going to suggest you get fast passes for it, but if the line's reasonable, also do the standby, because the scene one for this one is really, really clever.
Let's start at the beginning. Where's the entrance?
Well, the entrance is basically across, directly across the street from the old Mrs. Potts quick service restaurant. I mean, just sort of, you know, you chunk in that way. Again, if you're doing Fast Pass, you walk directly by a really, you know, dead-on recreation of Snow White's cottage, which actually we'll talk later is a very clever way of hiding the last show scene for this attraction.
Okay, so so Mrs. Potts is sort of roughly, if you're facing where Snow White's Scary Adventures used to be, sort of around the corner to the left of that, and then you go straight back, right?
Right. Okay. So right. You know, it basically picture it's equidistance basically between Pooh and Princess Fairy Tale Hall. And supposedly that was deliberately done because they anticipated large lines for both of those, and they wanted something that, you know, people could, in between those two points, access. Okay. So if you're doing standby, you bang a right at the entrance, and you then go down a series of, you know, twisty paths that again, very heavily, you know, lots of birch, lots of, you know, tree for cover. You know, they've made an attempt to do some nice shade structure stuff.
So it's an outdoor queue.
Yep.
Interesting.
Until you breach the first building, which basically is a gem washing station, and it's two series of long, narrow, touch-sensitive screens with about, I want to say, 4 or 5 points on either side of that you can stand on. And it's what's really clever is that you have these series of different colored, different shaped gems, ovals, circles, rectangles, squares, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And you with a finger, you can touch and drag them to a station. And you, in groupings of three, you pull them off. And, you know, it's... Again, after a long day of walking around a theme park, it's oddly soothing. You know,
it's interactive, right? You get to use your brain a little bit. Yeah.
And that coupled with they have a fun touch that every so often, and they weren't willing to talk about how randomized this is, but suddenly the bar of soap that Dopey swallowed floats through. And if you touch that ricochets are all around the tank and that sort of thing.
Oh, funny.
You then move on to what they call the gem washing station, which... Again, one of the reasons you want to do this in, you know, toward dusk or early evening light is that at each of these gem washing stations, as you wave your hand under it, basically a stream of water starts, but it's brightly colored. So it's LEDs up in the pouring fixture itself. Mm-hmm. But as you touch it, it plays a musical tone. And if you can basically run your hands through all of these streams of water that are different colored, you get sort of a harp thing going on.
Oh, nice. What's the first station called?
First station is called Gem Washing, that's the gem sorting. And supposedly you've sorted them out, you brought them out of the water, and then you go over to the next station and you're now cleaning them.
Okay.
And then you walk to the next room. Actually, this is one of the reasons why you want to bring a couple of people along with you when you do Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, because they have now you're in the room where they're piling the gems, and there are these 7 barrels around this sort of turn in the trail,
mm-hmm.
and a turn in the queue. And if you start to spin the barrel that's lit from within, what'll happen is on the ceiling directly above you, you'll get a swirling pattern of color, but eventually it will form one of the dwarves who will be doing a piece of the animation from the Silly Song. And
you have to spin it, the barrel.
Yeah, but again, in order to get the full effect, you've got to have people at all 7 stations spinning them, so you suddenly get all of the dwarves at that point. So very, very clever.
It's projected on the ceiling?
Projected on the ceiling.
How do you spin the barrels?
Well, it's a it's counterclockwise, but they're on a pivot point, and you just grab them at the base and spin.
Really? Like a giant, like a wine barrel, a big, like, pickle barrel. Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So bring some hefty friends, is what you're saying.
There you go. Well, actually, it's interesting you bring up hefty friends, because we're about to get to the part where the ore car moves. And, yes, you want to bring Fat Uncle Chuck with you on this trip. You know, I'm curious if you're taking your anorexic friends with you to go see Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. Not as much fun.
Okay.
Just ahead now is the merge point for the fast pass and the standby line.
Okay.
Relatively short queue at that point, and we're talking about five cars at a time, each of which seat four people. And there's been some disagreement about how many. In fact, that's the other problem right now is that they haven't been running. I think when we were there, they were running two trains at a time.
Mm-hmm.
They were trying to get it up to four, and I believe there's a fifth train, but
really,
they aren't willing to talk about that just yet. I think that
that's a lot of because the ride's only at what two minutes, two and a half.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's where it gets challenging.
Wow, that's a train every 30 seconds, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the other thing. They were, as we were there, they were, and again, it's fascinating to watch them getting practice dispatching trains and loading trains with the press, you know, and part of the problem with that is for a lot of the press event, they had one train that was just detailed to be the reaction shot train where, you know, you just, I don't understand. Why would anyone want to watch this video? But basically, it's the face of the person who's riding the train as they experience Seven Dwarfs Mine Train.
Yeah, so it's a lot of like hair rushing backwards, a lot of
teeth.
A lot of misshapen faces.
That's right, and a lot of eventually pointing off screen, like, "Wow, look at that!" It's like, "Oh, let me turn the camera around so you can see it."
The thing that you can't see behind you.
Very cool. So. But they've really done a nice job in the load unload area. Even the gates are themed to look like they're hewn out of rough wood. And again, that they spent a lot of time looking at the ornamentation, the style of the 1937 Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. In fact, propping for this thing, that there's 450 props that they created for this thing, just specifically for this attraction. And when you consider that. We're only talking 2,000 linear feet of track, you know. I mean, that's a ridiculous amount of detail for, again, as you said,
probably four and a half feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay, all right.
Which is obscured by a tree that's growing too quickly. All right, so you get on board. They do the standard safety check. You know, they run a cast member down each side and ask you once you push, you know, your lap bar down to rattle it to make sure you don't fly out. And then you're dispatched, and the first hill, the first drop is straight out of the station. You just, in fact, there's two drops in this thing and two climb hills. There's a 31-foot drop and a 42-foot drop. But you slide right out of the station and go. And your first ore car flying to the side experience is seconds after you've gone out of dispatch. And then, you are hugging the landscape as you zoom along here. And the other thing you really need to pay attention to on this attraction is how quiet it is.
Really?
That becomes you then understand that when you finally get to the mine scene. For example, when you do the first load hill, when you're going by the jib that actually – that's the other thing. They've actually – harvested the vultures out of the original Snow White Scary Adventure.
Oh, cool.
And I want to say five of the original dwarves from the Silly Song sequence. But we'll get to that in a moment. So you climb the hill, then you whiz down, and you're going by trees, and it's just this thing hugs the landscape, and add to that the thing of when you're going through the tight current turns, and again, you've got your fat Uncle Chuck along with you. That ore car just slides right out, and it's a really great experience. But now you come around the turn, and here's the Seven Dwarfs Mine, and suddenly your coaster becomes a ride vehicle. And
right. This is the big show scene. You're in the mountain, right?
Yep. And now we need to introduce another element of this attraction, the dwarves. Been a lot of talk online about this projected face a technology that they use to do the dwarves. And I can tell you from having talked with Dave Bossert, the gentleman who's in charge of special projects at Walt Disney Animation Studios, his group did the animation for this thing. This wasn't the original plan. Again, this is Stags. Hmm. Okay. They originally were supposed to do traditional audio animatronic figures. So You know, that whatever movements, you know, whatever they were going to do, you know, you were going to have that rigid plastic face, and they were going to have to work around this. And so this is about 2 years out. So, I mean, 2 years out from opening, I want to stress here. So we're talking...
So 2012. So they've been working on it for the better part of 3 years.
2012. And they've just looking at the models and the mock-ups, and Staggs is like, geez, I don't know. And they said, well, wait, let's show you something else we've been working on. And they had dummied up the two or three other characters. Dave was fairly circumspect, wouldn't tell me which characters they had done these tests with. But it's if you've seen the Buzz Lightyear figure in Space Ranger Spin.
Right. That's a projected face.
That's a projected face. But again, that's a projected face from 98.
Yeah.
Okay, now if you've seen the Lumiere figure in it's a story time with Belle, and how much crisper that sort of thing
that's
is.
Projected?
That's projected.
Is it really?
Yeah, the actual face of Lumiere, not the, necessarily the mouthpiece, but the eyes, the eyebrows, that sort of thing, that's all projected.
Wow.
So,
into that. Wow, okay.
Yeah, so now, you know, those are basically the proof of concept for what they were going to do. So Stag sees those, sees the prototype, like, oh, we got to go with that. They make this decision 18 months ahead of opening.
Oh, jeez.
So they suddenly, again, you're junking everything that you had for the figures. I mean, the poses.
Personal life? What personal life?
There you go.
Well, kids, it's been great.
But I'll tell you, in context, and again, don't let these figures don't video well, because the only way they video is if you've got an external light source. All right, if you're going into this with the lighting that the show lighting and the projection, these are really kind of astounding. They are going to be going forward the gold standard for what Disney does in dark rides, because, you know, and again, Dave and his team were determined to make sure that these things looked like they were straight out of 37 film. I mean, they'd sat there and studied frame by frame, and it's like, for example, Sleepy, it's like, how does Sleepy indicate that he's asleep? And it's like, well, every so often an eye sort of opens. And so it's like, all right, so when do we do that, and how do we do that, and how exactly does Grumpy grimace, and with this pose? But the killer figure, that when you finally get to Doc and he's up at his gem sorting station, and the clock from the film that announces that the end of day goes off, again, you're going to want to ride this attraction a couple of times just to enjoy that moment, because, you know, he looks at the clock, he then gestures to you, he lifts a hand to his face and starts the hi-ho song, and then puts a hand to his ear to listen to see if the other dwarfs respond, and then they do, and he smiles, and he waves his hand to the tune of the music, and there's a level of fluidity and lifelike thing. When you combine how fluid the AA figure is, coupled with this projected face, it should not work, but my God, does it really work. And then the best part of it is you now start up the load hill, which is, it's not a load hill, it's a show scene, because now the dwarves are singing hi-ho, and what they did is they created this brand new animation that keys off of, that they pulled, you know, it's inspired by the original film,
mm-hmm.
Of the dwarf, the silhouette of the dwarves marching up the hill, ready to go, you know, to go home. And that coupled with the light effect of the jewels shimmering off the top of the cavern. I mean, again, you really, really, really want to go when you're losing the light here. Not so dark that you can't see the trees that are, again, they're clipping back now. But, you know, you want it just dark enough so you can, particularly for the finale of this attraction. All right, so you come out of the Seven Dwarfs mine train, you do the second drop, and it's a series of really tight curves, which again, because you've got your fat Uncle Chuck with you, you're really swinging out with the ore car, and you finally come around Snow White's cottage, and you hit
this
the bridge.
This is towards the end of the ride.
This is the end, toward the end of the ride, and you make the turn, and you are basically 100 feet from the offload area, but you're now behind Snow White's cottage, and you're looking in through, I had no idea that Snow White had picture windows, but yay!
Sure.
Yay,
it's too big in Germany.
Yeah. And you're now, that they're doing the silly song. And so you, and what's bizarre is you've got the old limited motion figures from Snow White's Scary, and they're sort of like, you know, just that you know that how poorly they moved. But in front of them is Snow White, and a full-size Snow White. She's got to be, you know, 5-6 feet tall, next to a dopey standing on top of Sneezy in a cloak. And they're dancing. And it's not bogus theme park dancing. I don't – and again, I want to see how this mechanism works because – you know, I mean, they are doing the dance from the film, mm-hmm. and the way they have built the AA figure, the weight of the arms, you know, the way the clothes move, the way Dopey's ears flap, these things look, you know, as close to alive as you can get with an AA figure. And again, they're duplicating the dance from the film. And, you know, in fact, I got lucky that I arrived at a point, my train came in and there was a train ahead of me that had camera crew and it took them a while to offload. And I sat there for 3 minutes watching this dance. And it was one of these things where they dance in front of you and they dance out of the room and then they dance back into the room. You know, it's again, that's, and nobody ever even talked about this scene. Everyone was talking about the mines, the fact that they had this great button, but the button gets even better because finally when your train starts to move and you're going by the Seven Dwarfs mine train, who's peering in through the window but the crone with a basket of apples? And they have just enough movement that you buy. I mean, she turns her head to you and she moves her arm and that sort of thing. You know, you're only seeing her for 2-3 seconds or thereabouts, but it's enough to nail the idea, the way she shifts your weight or that sort of thing.
Oh, that's great.
But it all comes together. It's you know, if you're looking for a ride to introduce your kids to thrill rides on, this is the ride. You know, I know it took way too long to build this thing. I mean, let's be honest, Lynn. You know, when you announce something in September of 2009 and you're opening it in May of 2014, that's damn near 5 years.
Yeah.
But I think all of the complaints are going to go away after people start riding this thing because it's just it's got charm to spare.
How roller coastery is the ride? I mean, is it something that – remember, they're going for something between – Barnstormer and Big Thunder Mountain in terms of, you know, thrills and scariness. How is it?
Okay, I'm going to tell you something that's going to get me in trouble with Disney.
and roll them.
Okay. I Nancy is trying to get me healthy, so I'm taking a water aerobics class in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Sure.
There's a great line out of the Big Bang Theory that, you know, you get that many people in a swimming pool, it's like feeding time at the manatee tank. And they're right. It's not pretty. But there's this poor kid who named Joe. His mother has evidently decided to take him to the water aerobics with her. And he's like this 15, 16-year-old high school sophomore. And, you know, you can clearly see, as uncomfortable I am, he's like 10,000 times more uncomfortable.
All right.
And so we strike up a conversation. It turns out the week that they're having the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train media event, his high school band is going to be at the Magic Kingdom marching through it. And it turns out he's a huge Disney geek. By the way, knew you. You know, it's like, hey, I work with Lynn Tessa. I was like, oh, Lynn Tessa. You know, so it's like, oh, well, okay. You must be cool then. You work with Lynn Tessa. So I say, well, you know, I don't know if I can do anything, but tell you what, you know, because again, it turns out that, and the day they're marching through the Magic Kingdom and they're going to cut them loose and play there is the exact same day as the media party. He said, look, I don't know if I can do this, but let's see if we can maybe get you in to do this thing. So, all right, jump to the evening of the event. Security is like Fort Knox. I mean, you've got to come in and show your, you know, your media credential, and they hand you a ticket that says the time, and I'm like, oh, crap. And the kid actually calls me while I'm on the bus going in, and he said, let me scope out the situation. Let me see what I can do.
Yeah.
So it's now like 8:45, and, you know, I feel bad because the party's supposed to wrap at 9, and I'm not going to be able to do anything with this kid, and this is when Nancy finds out that Grumpy Cat is at the party.
Really?
You know,
Grumpy Cat was there.
Grumpy Cat was there, all right? And Nancy, being the feline fan of the age, is like, we have to find Grumpy Cat. And so we're literally tasked to, you know, she's going to go to the front of the party, and I'm sent to the back to see if that's where Grumpy Cat is hanging out. And I walk to the back of the party, and they put a hedge around a lot of the new Fantasyland. But there's this gap in the hedge, and there's a plaid, a very nice young lady, one of the guest relations person, standing in the gap, and I walk over to her, and it's like, what are you doing here? Well, for the event, the restrooms are over there in, you know, the Dumbo's Big Top. It's like, really? So it's like, so I step through the gate, and it's like, I have found the hole in the perimeter. So Craig could throw open my cell phone, and Joe is still in the park, and say, Joe, come now to the back of the park. You need to get to the Big Top souvenir scent place. You know, and I walk up to the plaid, and, you know, Joe appears, and I go, it's like, see this young man, see this nice young man who walked through your park today in blistering temperatures and has come all the way from New Hampshire, and all he wants to do is ride Seven Dwarfs Mine Train so he can have bragging rights over the 250 other band members from his high school. Yeah, right.
And you were a band geek once, you plaid, were you?
You know, and the woman, see, she, give her credit, she smiles and says, you know, I've never noticed the architecture in that building over there. And she turns, and, you know, it's like, clearly there's a gap. So yeah. Joe and I blitz through the hole, all right? And I rush him onto the ride and get him on. And again, 16-year-old male, he screamed the entire time on the ride, all right? I mean, because, again, for him, this was a legitimate coaster. Yeah. And loved the show scene, loved the, you know, and just all the way back to, and that was the nicest thing is that, you know, it was actually he and his parents who came to the back gate of the thing. So it was like one of these things where it's like, let me take your son, not a pedophile, honestly. Yeah.
Let me take your son for a ride in the theme park. Yeah. That or it's like the last train out of Germany in 1939. No, you take the boy. Take the boy. Let him go.
But I get him the moment I get him back to the hedge to return to his parents, they announce the party's over. So it was like, could not have timed it better.
Oh, excellent.
The plaid smiles, he smiles, he goes off. But again, we have a 16-year-old boy who, again, if this were lame, would have told me right up front, but loved it as a coaster, but also loved it as a Disney fan because they did such a nice job with the dwarves. So again, now Disney will never invite me to a press event ever again, which probably isn't a bad thing, you know. So, but yeah, I mean, they did, all in all, in fact, I was talking with a number of folks at the event about, well, how would you grade this? And it's like, let's be blunt here. It's not an E-ticket, all right?
Yeah.
It's a family coaster. I would say it's a solid D-ticket, heavy on charm, lots of detail. But again, just 2 minutes long. The one show scene, which is an amazing show scene. In fact, it's going to be interesting going forward, seeing them use this technology in other attractions. In fact, the key is this only works. This projected stuff only works in complete darkness. If you know you're bleeding outside light in, or if you're in a show scene that has other lighting elements, it's just not going to fly. So they're now, I think, the first place it's going to be used in California is actually in the retooled Alice in Wonderland. They're going to redo.
Is that what they're doing there?
Yep. They're also doing, let's be honest here, they have to work around the Americans with Disabilities Act. Yeah. They had to create some sort of, you know, railings and safety procedures and that sort of thing. But in the heart of the attraction, there's a scene where the Red Queen turns and screams off with her head, and what they've literally taken her head off, all right, and they're putting the projection technology inside of this thing. So you're going to go by all of these static versions of figures from Alice in Wonderland, mm-hmm. and suddenly the Red Queen is going to turn around and scream at you, and it's going to be, okay, when did that change? So, but no, they've done a great job, and again, I feel bad for all of you who booked trips down in May to do this, and let's be honest here, the May 28th thing is when it's open to the public. There will be soft openings done between now and then. The fix, again, the horticultural thing isn't going to take forever.
Right.
They still have to train multiple cast members getting, you know, they've been running with cast members now trying to get multiple trains and get better at their dispatch time. Because face it, you know, their concern with an attraction like this always is the hourly throughput. What's your capacity? And, you know, so they're going to be working on that. But my understanding is they haven't said as such yet And again, I'm going to get in trouble with Disney probably for saying this, but for the 24-hour party that's, I think, on the 24th?
Yeah.
Is that right?
23rd, 24th.
They are going to try to have the attraction open for the guests during that party. That's sort of the special sauce for that event, you know, at the Kingdom. But please understand that, you know, if we're talking a night that rain, and again, that's, remember, this is an attraction that can't really run during the rain. I mean, you know, because.
Oh, really?
Well, think about it. You're kind of in that test track country where if you.
Oh, yeah.
You come out during the drop and you're whizzing around and
yeah,
one
it's
of
gonna
those,
sting, yeah.
Yeah, those lovely light Florida rains, you know.
Yeah.
Ow, 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 my eyes! You know, so.
I've done coasters in the, I've done Big Thunder in the rain, and it's like, you get hit with something at 25 miles an hour. It's not, even if it's small raindrops, it's still.
Yeah. But again, and the interesting thing is that for coaster buffs, evidently, now this is the food chain. That if you're introducing your children to coasters, you start off with the Great Goofini, which only has one lift hill and one ride out.
Right.
You then graduate to Seven Dwarfs Mine Train, which has two lift hills, two ride outs, and then, you know, the pièce de résistance is you take them over to Big Thunder. They do the three hills and the three ride outs. And, before I forget, everyone's been talking about the wonderful new projected effect for Disneyland's Big Thunder. It's coming east, not at any great speed, but it's coming east that we're going to lose, that faux tumbling rock cave in effect. That's
it hasn't worked in a while.
No. If you've been at the Disneyland and seen the new version of this, it's just stunning. But again, same thing. The only way this projected effect works is once your train gets in there, the blackout doors close.
Mm.
And now you can see this amazing fire explosion effect before you do the next dump out. So,
cool. That's something to look forward to. That's really good. All right, Jim. Thanks very much for the overview of the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. When's your next trip back? By the way, you know when's your next trip to ride it?
I guess you and I should talk. I'm hoping to get back there after they've officially opened it to the public.
Middle of June.
There you go. Well, that's if I can get away from a certain boy wizard, I'll be happy to go over and hang out with the dwarves.
Oh, that's right. So, yeah, because that's going to be it's a whole other topic. We'll talk about that on the next show.
There you go.
All right, Chip. So. Thanks very much for the details on Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, take care, guys.
All right, for Jim, this is Len. You've been listening to the Unofficial Guide to Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. Please go into iTunes and rate our show. Do it right now. Do it now. And then also let us know what you'd like to hear in upcoming episodes. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.